Howden. I'm with the Oregon Center for Family Policy, and I'll try and go through this actually quicker than the 5 minutes. There is another case besides the Tanner Court case that's of concern for many people. In the state of Vermont right now, there actually is a case that is pending there that's identical in stature to the case in Hawaii from last year. And we're awaiting right now around the country the results of the Vermont Supreme Court's decision with regards to that case that would have a similar effect around the country with regards to what the Hawaiian citizens were voting on in their state recently. Also, I drew attention in my testimony to a 1996 opinion from the U.S. Department of Justice under Attorney General Janet Reno, which stated it would be incomprehensible for any court to conclude that traditional marriage laws are motivated by animus towards homosexuals. Rather, they have been the unbroken rule and tradition in this and other countries, primarily because they're conducive to the objectives of procreation and responsible child-rearing. And in a further opinion later in that month, the Department of Justice stated that the act itself that was passed by Congress would be sustained as constitutional and that there was no legal issues raised from their perspective. Beyond that, just moving on through my testimony as quickly as I can, it's our concern that we recognize marriage is really the foundational bedrock institution that society and cultures have operated on for literally thousands of years. This definition is critical to protecting the significance and the importance of marriage. And from a legal perspective, we can always find a number of groups that would propose a different form or different definition, different type of marriage, or a different construct for a family unit. But in the end, the law will always find itself in a position to have to define exactly what is going to be acceptable and what isn't. And if we were to refuse any one particular group as a legitimate form of marriage or a family construct, we then would be faced with some of the same questions that some people bring up with regards to why should we define or defend marriage as it stands today. Another consideration, and I won't go through these particular sightings, but I gave just a few results from some studies that have occurred here recently, and actually there are a plethora of them out there in social science research, which document the incredible need for children to be raised by a mother and a father and the ramifications for them in that child-rearing experience. The other statement I'd like to make is that this doesn't imply that all two-parent working families are successful or that single-parent families are unsuccessful. And I say that from personal experience in the sense that I grew up in a single-parent home, and my mother raised five children. Four of us were boys, and we gave her and the neighborhood and everybody a pretty good run for their money. And our mom is a hero to us, an absolute hero. But all six of us would sit here and tell you today that it's really not the desired experience for a child growing up. The need for that male and female combination and the construct in which it brings to the family dynamic is incredible. The other thing that I would note here is that 29 other states in the country have passed this along with Congress and President Clinton's signature. It is under consideration by some other states as well. And just to encourage you and your consideration of this to give it a careful evaluation and appreciate your hard work on the effort. And with that, I will bear with your time consideration.
I appreciate that. You were right to 5 minutes. Thank you, Representative Werbelow.
Thank you. Just one question. The 29 other states you speak to, actually, is it not true that their laws are that a marriage consists only of the union of one man and one woman? They do not go further, or at least the majority of them don't, to discuss what benefits. Is that not true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Werbelow, I talked to some people regarding the implications of their passage, and it was the opinion of some legal counsel that I've gotten that that passage would supersede efforts by courts to make the same kind of connection that the courts here in Oregon have made. But it's not a deliberate connection to the question.
It's not in their laws themselves.
Correct.
Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Just to follow up on that same line of questioning, of all the states, did they all put them in their constitutions?
It is a mixture. It is a mixture, Representative Edwards, and I cannot recall the combination, but it is somewhere near 50-50. I apologize. I cannot give that to you accurately at this moment.
All right. All right, thank you very much, Mr. Howden. Appreciate your testimony, gentlemen. Let me call up next panel of Rabbi Rose, Chris Tanner, and Jim and Norma Walters. If you both want to come forward together, you're on the list together. That'd be fine. We can bring up an extra chair. Welcome, Rabbi. Thank you for your patience. Please.
Jim. My name is Emmanuel Rose. I serve as Rabbi of Congregation Beth Israel in Portland, Oregon's largest Jewish congregation. I've been Beth Israel's rabbi for 39 years, and I'm here because I care about our state and the rights of all our citizens, and I'm opposed to HJR 29. We can probably all agree that the institutions most shaken by the contemporary matter of gay and lesbian rights are the major religious institutions. As a member of a transitional generation, mine is the generation of religious leaders for which no theological groundwork had been prepared. We came out of religious histories which simply did not countenance any deviations from traditional male-female relationships. Particularly because of this background, these comments are addressed to those of you who either support Resolution 29 or may yet be making up your minds. I understand the emotional, psychological, and political process with which you are wrestling. Some years ago, when the first major ballot measure regarding gay-lesbian rights was presented to Oregonians, many of us in the religious community found ourselves in a real struggle. We were forced to confront many questions that most of our traditions had not yet dealt with. This theological struggle is far from over, despite the fact that some matters have indeed been processed to greater or lesser degrees. It is not my intent to engage you in dialogue over the moral and theological questions to which I refer. It is my belief that such wrestling most properly belongs inside of our personal religious worlds rather than in the institutions of the state. Precisely because of this belief shared by many in the religious community of Oregon, at that time, a broad cross-section united in support to support basic rights for the gay-lesbian community. I will never forget the day when Archbishop Leveda, then of Portland, wrote a communication to his entire community in this spirit. It was a powerful moment in the history of Oregon. For everyone knew that the Archbishop had risen above his only deeply held personal theology and that of his church, and distinguished that theology from what he believed to be the proper role of the state. It was a defining moment. And I guess that is my appeal to you, to distinguish between your personal beliefs and our common civic concern and primary responsibility for the rights and welfare of all Oregonians. We have learned that the politics of exclusion only creates turbulence for an entire society. Individuals and groups excluded for whatever reason become festering sores for which society ultimately pays a very heavy price. This great country, in contrast to nations all over the world, has uniquely understood this dynamic, which is why we have enjoyed such stability. And when we have erred, we have paid a severe price until injustices were corrected. Having lived in this great state for longer than I can believe, one of our very special qualities is clearly and dramatically a respect for rights of others, even in sharpest disagreement. Because of history and religious tradition regarding gay-lesbian issues, there is probably no greater test of our emotional and intellectual capacity to distinguish between personal belief and responsibility to all citizens. For the sake of peace in our Oregon community, I cannot strongly enough urge you to defeat HJR 29. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Rabbi. Any questions? Ms. Tanner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Christine Tanner. You've heard my name mentioned several times this afternoon already. I'm a nursing professor at Oregon Health Sciences University, and I'm here with my family, my partner of 14 years, Lisa Chickadons, and our children, Katie, 8, and Jacob, 5, are in the back of the room. I'm obviously here to speak in opposition to HJ 29. Although the last panel assured us that the major is proactive in trying to protect the institution of marriage, for me, this is much more about wrestling away the access to benefits that we've spent the last 8 years trying to obtain. I'd like to share with you why Lisa and I, along with two other families, went about trying to get domestic partners. I'll just briefly summarize this because you have the written testimony. Since 1985, Lisa and I have been in a committed relationship. We've done a variety of things to try to come somewhat close to the 210 things that the Institution of Marriage allows. But among those things are sharing finances, owning a house together. We've executed a variety of legal documents to protect our interests, including a medical power of attorney and wills. We together decided to have children. Lisa gave birth to them by artificial insemination, and I legally adopted them. In 1991, well, right after we'd had our first child, at that point, I'd been at the university for 12 years. I was a teacher of nursing, a researcher. I'd done a lot of things to try to improve the quality of healthcare in Oregon as a nurse and a teacher of nursing. In the office next to mine, a new faculty member arrived. She was married, and she immediately went about signing up her husband for benefits before she ever taught her first class. If something happened to Lisa so that she couldn't work, I wanted her to be protected by health insurance, to have the same protections that any public employee's spouse would have. It was a simple matter of fairness, equal pay for equal work. There's another consequence of HJ 29, and I know that you're well aware of all of the measures that we've had put before the public over the last many years since 1988. And during each of those battles, each of those measures, a message has been sent to a group of Oregon citizens, namely the gay and lesbian community, that we do not deserve basic civil rights. I beg you, please do not send that message to my children, that they come from a family that is not deserving of equal rights. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Tanner. Other questions? Okay. Representative Werbeloff.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment.
Yes.
I'm so pleased that you mentioned your children at the end, because we hear about providing an environment for our children that is positive, and yet we actually do the opposite when we send this message to the children. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair. Hey, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, and I appreciate your coming today and testifying, and more importantly, bringing this case, because I think you've helped push the envelope on what we need to decide here as a state, and I think you're right up there with a lot of people who've broken new ground. I appreciate that.
Okay. Jim and Norma Walters, welcome to you folks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jimmy Walters, and I currently reside with my wife and Tiger. My wife Norma is accompanying me here today. I was born in Portland almost 74 years ago, and I've lived in the state for all of that time, with the exceptions of 23 years of active duty in the U.S. Navy. I'm a retired lieutenant, veteran of World War II, Korea, and the early part of Vietnam. This year, my wife and I will celebrate our 50th wedding anniversary. In that marriage, we have 3 children. One of our 2 daughters happens to be lesbian. We are here to support her and the thousands of other gay men and lesbian women who have been and are being discriminated against. My wife and I oppose House Joint Resolution 29. The bill seems to pave the way for anti-gay lobbies to divert attention from equivalent benefits for all workers to the subject of marriage. The bill would lead people to believe it is fixing a problem when no problem exists. Many companies have been giving workplace benefits to gay and lesbian couples for years. We are concerned that HJR 29 would erode those benefits by denying privileges or benefits associated with marriage to anyone who is not married. An editorial in the Eugene Register-Guard on April 17th and a similar editorial in the Oregonian on April 7th both agree that the Tanner decision was a pure application of the constitutional requirement that all citizens receive equal treatment under the law. That's all that Norma and I want, is equal treatment under the law for our children, not for just two of them, but all three of them. Please do not allow this bill to proceed. Such a bill would promote conflicts similar to those occurring during ballot measure 9 and 13. The majority of the voters have already registered their desire to treat gays and lesbians fairly. I am reminded that the state recently apologized to several groups of citizens because of the way they were discriminated against in the past. Please, you can be a major factor in eliminating discrimination and hate in this state. Just let this bill die. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mrs. Walters, did you have anything?
No, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions for the Walters? Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Chair. Not a question, really, but a comment. I'd like to congratulate you two for your upcoming 50th wedding anniversary. Very impressive.
Chairman.
Yes, Representative Williams.
I just want to say I've had the chance to meet with the Walters in my office, and as my constituents, I appreciate their efforts and them coming down again, and I apologize for the time and the in and out that we've had to go through today in this hearing.
Right, just so we get to say our piece.
Yes, well, thank you for sticking around for that. Okay, let's bring up Bob Ekstrom and Lou Barris. Welcome. I'll let you decide which one of you wants to go first.
My name is Robert Ekstrom. I live in Scappoose. And I'm very grateful for the freedom that we as citizens have that I can be here today and speak with this panel. Time is short, and I think that I'll just say right off that I'm very pleased that HJR 29 has come this far, and I look forward to it proceeding through the House and on to the people. as citizens, we have the ability before elections to decide and then to vote for and against you folks. And afterwards, why, we're left with the ability to make appeals and to pray for you and to rely on your best judgment in all matters. And I just want you to know that you folks are in my prayers and my families and many other people as well for that wisdom that you need. I'd like to offer, to be brief, just a little story that I think is relevant and instructive and hopefully a little entertaining and just make an appeal to you. Many years ago, when the West was still wild, there was a town that was separated from another by a mountain pass, the only connection between the two being a stage line that went back and forth on a regular basis. The stage line needed a new driver. And
I'm sorry, sir, we are called to the floor. Is this going to be the last call of the afternoon? Okay. Last
do you
call.
Do you have a bill number, Eric?
Okay, we are
it's
in recess.
It's the Portland.
I'm sure. I got it. Oh, that's right.
just moved here?
No, actually, I've worked...
Karen, I'm going to be home at 5:00.